All right, K-State has another transfer, and Bruce Weber's actions are speaking louder than words, though I'm not a huge fan of the words that we saw in Kellis Robinette's article. And you heard Kellis in the first hour of the show discussing that in depth. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify to find the show if you missed any of that. Let's go ahead and set the table on the transfer here. K-State gets Marquise Noel. You heard us talk about him earlier this week out of Little Rock in the transfer portal. He announced that on his social media. Mark Smith, by the way, now official through K-State. Noel, not quite yet. The I's and T's not dotted and crossed. But it's a 5'7 kid. That's a downside. It's somebody who opted out halfway through the season, and his coach basically trashed him on the way out the door, saying Marquise didn't want to be a part of this team, so at the end of the day, he's opted out. It's the best thing for him. It's the best thing for us. We're definitely happy to be moving on. That's not a great thing either, but there is a lot to like here. He's a former first-team All-Sunbelt pick, averaged 14 points per game over his career, and started 54 games at Little Rock. Also, a guy who was a former three-star recruit, by the way. It's not like this is somebody that came totally off the radar. He had some decent options. Georgetown was an offer for him out of high school, and he decided to go all the way to Little Rock. So it's a guy who can shoot the ball, 39% three-point percentage, one of his seasons there, and around 35% for his career, much like Mark Smith, who K-State already added. Much more of a playmaker and not a set shooter than Smith, but that gives K-State a different dynamic and dimension than Smith. So it's like two guys that you added, a lot of experience, a lot of shooting, and this is somebody that will pull up without fear, like Steph Curry, a couple dribbles inside midcourt. Somebody that legitimately could go get a shot and would not be afraid to take it, which is, we all know, something K-State needed desperately this past year and did not have a whole heck of a lot of. Okay? That's good. I won't criticize the move at all, other than saying I just hope that they've done their homework on what it is that happened between coach and player at the end of the year. You don't love to see a quote like that. But if you've done your homework well enough to feel comfortable with that, type of risk that you have to take. Okay, so what? The kid's 5'7". Let's see if he can play. Let's see if he can hack it here. Kansas, by the way, just took a D2 player today from Missouri Southern on their roster. So, like, teams are taking chances with things like that, especially with how active the transfer portal is right now. I don't like, though, seeing that Bruce Weber said Chris Kleiman had to convince him to embrace the fact that this is what the game is going to be like now, instead of fighting that this is what the game is going to be like now. And I also don't love the following. Kellis Robinette's article says, though Weber or K-State has an extra scholarship open, though Weber said he will be selective with the team's final scholarship and may leave it open because he worries about keeping 14 players happy. Okay, so they already do have 13 scholarship players, which typically in a normal year is the limit. They have that and still have a scholarship open because Mike McGurl does not count against that limit, being that he is a quote-unquote super senior. He's somebody that's staying on your roster that gets the extra year of eligibility because of COVID. Doesn't count against your roster, so you can have an extra player here. But this does just kind of drive me insane, because to me it's about not embracing the whole culture and idea of what's happening now in college basketball, which is that guys are going to transfer. I understand the worry about keeping 14 players happy, but that's a very 5, 10, 15 years ago in college basketball kind of a problem, where transfers were much more notable. Didn't happen all that often. When it did, it was a bigger deal. And I'll even say that I can level with Bruce to an extent on, like, being somewhat gun-shy in that so many people use as ammo against him all the transfers that he's had throughout his time at K-State. But the game has changed. Like, now that's not anything, especially if it's a back end of the roster guy. No one's going to hold that against you. If you take your lotto ticket here with the 14th scholarship and it turns out to be a James Love, it turns out to be somebody like that that just doesn't play much and then leaves, it turns out to be, much as I love him, Ron Freeman. So what? That's the game. I mean, Kansas, I keep referencing them, but they, much like anybody that's a big power player in college basketball right now, like, they're just losing everybody that wasn't playing regularly, because all these guys see the opportunity to take a free year without penalty and actually go play somewhere. And you're just going to see that continue to happen. I just, Mitch, if I walked up to the gas station, I don't play the lottery at all. I find it to be pretty stupid, to be honest. But, you know, if I walk up to the table there and I bought 5 lotto tickets and they're like, hey, you can have this extra scratcher for free. Are you turning down the scratcher?
Where's this gas station?
Yeah, exactly. Do you play the lotto?
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay. Well, if somebody hands you a free ticket, you don't turn it down. I get that, if you're going to say, well, John, what if it throws off the team chemistry if somebody's unhappy? Well, do your job in vetting who this player actually is as a person. But assuming that you do that part of the job, which you would think you'd be doing with everybody else on the team, shouldn't be that big of a deal. Shouldn't be that big of a deal. And especially when you stare in the face what K-State did this past year, which is they had a game where they had to play against Oklahoma State with 5.5 scholarship players, and that was in a year where K-State took an open scholarship and just said, we'll wait. And they gave the scholarship to Petrakis for a semester, who, by the way, then did leave after that anyway. Like, the walk-on that you gave the extra scholarship to transferred at the end of the season. Like, it's going to happen. It's an inevitability. You will have transfers every year moving forward now. So don't give up the chance, because maybe it is. I mean, Marquise Noel, you are taking some risk. You are taking some risk there. So maybe he doesn't work out, but maybe you replace him with, and I'm just plucking names here right now, but I don't know what the interest would be with CJ Noland or if that's anything realistic at all now that he's already signed at Oklahoma. But maybe by taking him in, he turns out to be a freshman phenom. He turns out to be a star. Noel's not really that dude. You're done with Noel, and thank goodness you used that 14th scholarship there at the end of the year on Nolan, because now he's the guy for you moving forward. You have to take that opportunity and that chance when you get it.
Well, Coach Weber, and I love the guy, but recruit and coach, like, maybe your job is on the line at this point. I mean, I would want to go into this fight with full forces, a full group of guys that will go into battle and have your back. In coaching, you're not going to make everybody happy. There's always going to be somebody at the bottom of the list that's just not going to play as much as the other guys. It's not just basketball. Coach Klieman has 100 dudes on that roster, and only 11 can play at a time. Not everybody's going to be happy. And unfortunately, that's their problem. It's their fault that they're not getting on the field. It really is. Soccer. Coach Sabini has 30 players on the team. He can't even travel with all of them. That's a rule. You can't even travel with the full roster, so there's going to be, 6, 7, 8 girls that have to stay back because they didn't make the top 22 or 24, whatever the travel roster is. That's sports for you, okay? You're not going to make everybody happy, and honestly, it shouldn't be your job to make everybody happy. It is their job, the player's job, to play well enough, to practice well enough, to earn the minutes that you get on the court.
And that's where I'm sure Bruce would come back and be like, well, I mean, that's the problem with this whole thing nowadays. Like, I used to not make everybody happy and people would stick around. Now they're transferring. And it's like, okay, yeah, you're right. They are now. And that's just the reality. You have to deal with it.
Well, and to me, it's coaching harder, not smarter. Because Coach Weber's job's on the line this year. Take the chance and try to go get somebody else that gives you an opportunity to stick around for another year. Somebody with experience, somebody that can go out and play some basketball that is already used to playing a lot of minutes, and they're going to come in and maybe steal some minutes from somebody else that doesn't already play very much, or maybe did play a little bit for Bruce Weber this year, but you know what? This was a bad team. It might not be as tough to pass them to get on the floor a little bit more.
How many times over the past few years, too, this is another chunk of it that is infuriating with hearing this, is how many times have we heard, well, we haven't even had bodies to practice with. It wasn't just last year. It was not just last year with COVID issues where they would say, like, we'd be short on bodies, and, like, Shane Southwell, I mean, poor Shane, injured himself trying to practice last year. But even before that, I mean, there were plenty of times throughout those years where they had enough injuries going on, enough guys in walking boots that they were not able to fully practice the way that they wanted to. So if nothing else, it's an extra body and like a game body, a scholarship body to practice with and get your team better in practice. No matter who it is that's at the end, you're elevating the play of the guys up at the top because you have a chance to bring them around here in practice. I know just so much of this is it feels like not accepting that the toothpaste is out of the tube. The game has changed. When the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't get the toothpaste back in the tube. It's just not. It's not going to happen. So you can either figure it out or not. And to me, this falls under that. Again, the transfer is very nice start. Just want to make sure that that keeps going. Just want to make sure that this is not a battle that has to be fought every single year. And I'd like to maximize the chances next season of taking in as much talent as you possibly can and seeing what it is that hits. Because really, I mean, that's a lot of what the game is nowadays. Take as many rips at it as you can and just see what sticks. See what sticks. Take the best, most educated guesses you can at who it is that you're throwing in there, but you're not going to have a chance to develop most of these guys over 4 years. You're just going to have to throw them all into the pot and see what it is that actually has the substance to stick around and be good enough. And so if you have an extra chance at it, you have an extra lotto ticket, you want to do it.
Well, and this might not have anything to do with Coach Weber's decision of not wanting to fill that extra scholarship with the possibility of maybe he can give it to a walk-on for a semester. The thing is with the walk-ons, they know they are coming in to play not on scholarship. They're not even going to play. They're going to ride the bench, but they get the opportunity to suit up every game and practice with the team. They know they're not getting that scholarship. I hope that's not a part of the equation. I'm sure it's not, but I did want to throw that out there because, okay, it's temporarily a nice story to give a semester scholarship to Joe Petrakis, who's a great guy. He's fun to watch during the warm-ups, but he's never going to play unless you've got six guys and you need an extra against Oklahoma State.
Would not think that that's a legitimate part of the calculus. I think even Bruce, like he knows that that's not something you can be doing on a regular basis. But, yeah, fair enough. Open practice wish list. Open practice on Saturday for football. This will be the last full live show that we have for this week because of baseball. So what's on our open practice wish list? I'm going to go hard overhead with some of this. I'll explain next. Our open practice watch list here in just a moment. But how about this? I am intrigued by this, and not just because of it on its surface and what is going to happen at Kansas. But Kansas takes a commitment today from a Division II player from Missouri Southern State. I believe I just called them Missouri Southern. I didn't realize it was Missouri Southern State. Missouri Southern State. Kid's name is Cam Martin, 6'9 player. Crazy numbers, like 26 points per game at the D2 level. Clearly is an outstanding player. It will be fascinating to see what happens with him at Kansas in and of itself. But the reason I bring this up is because our dude Trevor Hudgens has been absolutely balling out at the D2 level. And I have been curious, and I was having this conversation with somebody, another media person, former media person that covered Manhattan High back in the day. It's like, man, I would love to see like what this looks like with Trevor Hudgens at the Division I level. Now, Northwest Missouri State has been a great team. They just won a national championship again. Hudgens has been awesome. You're doing a lot of winning there. I get it.
D2 player of the year.
Right. I get it. Like, there's a lot to like about the situation that you're in. But man, as an outside observer who has no investment in Northwest Missouri State at all, I would be fascinated to see what he would do at the Division I level. And a big part of this is like, one, I'm seeing that now some of these D2 players are making the jump up, and I see that happen to this Cam Johnson kid. But also, there was the game that Trevor Hudgens played against Duke. Like, he put up a... trying to find the specific number here. I'm sorry. I'm scanning through a story right now. See if you can find me what the box score was from Trevor Hudgens against Duke. But they almost went and won in Cameron Indoor. And like Coach K was talking about him after the game. And like that to me would obviously be some evidence that conceivably he could get it done at the Division I level, at the FBS Power 5 level.
That was an exhibition game. Duke won 69-63. Trevor Hudgens with 27 points, and he made 7 threes.
27 points against Duke. You know, I mean, I understand it's an exhibition, and Duke's not going to be necessarily giving it their all in that game, but, I mean, that's some evidence, right? That's some evidence that he could do it. That's just something. I have no inside information on whether it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. It's just something that, selfishly, I would love to see happen. As somebody that watched Hudgens just kill it at Manhattan, and was always wondering about, like, hey, what would the D1 opportunities actually be here? And now I've watched his success and seen how well he's doing in Northwest Missouri. I mean, what more are you going to accomplish there? They've won two titles since he's been there, and he's now the player of the year in D2. It's not a lot more that you're going to accomplish at that level. Now, if you're happy, you're happy. But if you're trying to accomplish whatever it is that you can accomplish, I would think that the opportunity would be there, right? Like, there has to be some kind of D1 opportunity somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure coaches are texting him, calling him, emailing, hey, man, you want a bigger challenge? You tired of playing in the MIAA? You want to take a step up in the basketball life with your extra year? I think he actually will technically have 2 years left with the extra year of eligibility. I would say why not. I mean, that's just personally me, but he might have a comfort zone at Northwest Missouri State with the Bearcats and likes winning national championships.
Hey, I'm sure something to be said for that. Awesome. If so, awesome. Selfishly, would love to see him take off and see what he can do at the D1 level. All right, so there's going to be an hour's worth of an open practice on Saturday for K-State football. The top of my watch list here, like things that I'll be looking for, is it's receiver, and it should be linebacker, it should be like Brent, it should be secondary, like nickel, like if we're talking about things that will be most impactful on the team and like how the team is actually going to fare next year, like it should be nickel, and it should be linebacker. And then if I wanted to go total, like, hey, I'm just going to be very shallow about this, it would be quarterback. Like, hey, let me find Jake Rubley. But I feel wide receiver is like my personal pet project right now. Going back to the fall and talking with Derek and Cole during Powercat game day, it was always like, what is the plan at receiver? I have always felt like there was something left to be desired with what's going on at receiver. And they've just rolled with basically what they already had. Now it's time for me to see what that's actually going to look like. I need to see it. I need to look out there and see if, like, one, is Malik Knowles still healthy? Is Knowles still out there looking like a dude? Does he truly look like a man amongst boys as far as K-State's receivers go? Because that would be a nice start. We know that it's possible when he's at his best, fully functioning out there, he can look like a man amongst boys against Texas. Like that play that he had against Texas 2 years ago in 2019. But I need to see if he looks like a bona fide number one guy. I need to see if the Keenan Garber hype is real. We've heard a lot of talk, and it's hard to know, is this like, is he legitimately popping, or are they just trying to convince us all that Garber really can be that guy because he's basically going to have to be a productive receiver? So I want to see that. And then beyond that, it's like, look, and Phillip Brooks, no offense to him at all, but he's not really on my list. I hope he looks great, but I feel like I know what Brooks is, a complimentary piece at receiver, and then a really good special teams weapon. So next, I go down to, like, does Jalen Travis stand out? Does Brennan Hawkins stand out? A couple of the young guys, redshirt freshman. Either one of those guys stand out, like they have the potential to really legitimately be something. That's how my list shakes out at number one with receivers. I go quarterbacks number two. I do. Because, again, I'm a sucker for hard overhead. It's hard to get as excited about linebacker or nickel or just defensive backs in general, even if you know that'll be more impactful on the team. It's also an easy thing to, like, look at and evaluate. Like, linebackers, how much can we tell based on what they're doing, like, how good they really are? I don't know. I don't know what exactly they're going to be doing. I don't know what the format will look like. Jake Rubley's number one on that list. Skylar Thompson will be more impactful. Will Howard would be more impactful to the success of next season. Rubley is probably not going to play a meaningful snap. Let's knock on wood after last year. But Rubley's number one on the list to look out for because I haven't seen him before. I'm very intrigued. I just want to know what he looks like and what it looks like when he slings the ball around. Beyond that, Skylar look healthy. And then, like, you should be able to really just take one look at Will Howard and be like, all right, they tell him the truth about his body and how much that's changed. Let's see what the deal is with that. And then number three, we're doing a top three here. Number three would be linebackers. And I'm most intrigued with Wayne Jones. Like, how does Wayne Jones look like he's fitting in there? Because that is one thing they have started to sell me on. Okay, this is a guy that's better up in the box. not as good out in space or when he's having to play back. All right. All right, you got me. Let's see what this dude looks like at linebacker. That's my list, Mitch.
Okay. Well, I will be at this open practice probably watching things a little bit differently because I will not be going to this open practice to expect a group of guys to make me feel better about a certain position. I don't think we're going to see that kind of action out there. We're going to see probably individual work with a little bit of team offense, team defense, run some plays. That's just a guess. But we're not going there to watch a full-on scrimmage. We're going there to watch practice. And they said, and Coach Van Malone
about
said,
practice.
We're just going to have a normal practice, and you're going to get a little bit of insight and see what kind of things we do at practice day in and day out. So that's what we're going to watch for an hour. But there are general curiosities I do have about some individuals. Julius Brents is on that list, the defensive back transfer from Iowa. I just want to see what kind of athlete he is. Is he a playmaker? Is he a day one type of guy that's going to come in and take a spot? I hope he is. But I would say with the newcomers, the top on my list is Daniel Imadorbebe. Because it sounds like to me that he has the biggest opportunity to make an impact when it comes to these newcomers. Because he is probably going to be, there's a good chance he's going to be the guy at tight end. With his D1 experience, it's hard to pass that up. And I'm sure he's a stud. And plus, he's going to be replacing Briley Moore. Briley Moore is a great player. Hashtag my guy from John Kurtz, the most successful my guy in history. I mean, how do you top that?
Big honor.
Even though he got hurt and then the offense got a little bit better. That was kind of weird, right? That's a joke. But finally, when it comes to my three, I do want to see Jake Rudley throw the football. I want to see what kind of arm he has, what kind of accuracy he has early on. Because he's going to get better from here. He's going to get a lot better from what we're going to see on Saturday. And there's so much hype around him. I got to see what's going on with the guy. And then a bonus selection, of course, hashtag my boy, Deuce Vaughn. I will not go to any K-State event without not wanting to see Deuce Vaughn in action.
Well, this whole segment just proved my point that I made. It's been a couple of weeks now, but like Deuce Vaughn's greatness has already been rendered fairly boring compared to the rest of the football team.
He's only going to get better, John.
I know, and it's like he was a true freshman last year and was just great. It's like, well, there's a lot of question marks and things that I want to see that are very intriguing. Like, I know that Deuce is going to be awesome. I know that he's going to be great, so that doesn't top my list of things that I want to see. But it should. He's going to be, once they actually get out there on the field to play meaningful games, he's going to be at the top of that list, or he better be, or else this team's going to be in big-time trouble. But you're right. It's a fair addition there, and none of this is meant in the way that it might come across where we're just, like, overlooking this dude. Should not be overlooking Deuce at all. Mitch has a number one song of the day coming up next.
Just the other day, he came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it, and as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad, you know I'm gonna be like you. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy.
Such a weird song. It's about father-son relationship or something.
Yeah. Yeah. 1974, Cats in the Cradle by Harry Chapin. 1 week and number one, singer-songwriter and philanthropist from New York City.
Just doesn't seem like
your old stomping grounds.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like the kind of song that would really like get people going and excited to be a number one hit.
Apparently, he was a big deal. He was known for his folk rock and pop rock songs. He achieved worldwide success, apparently, in the 70s. Became one of the most popular artists and highest paid performers. It's according to history. He was also a dedicated humanitarian as he fought to end world hunger. He was a key participant in Jimmy Carter's World Hunger Fight in 1977. You know we'll have a good time then. Sounds like an interesting guy to me. I don't know.
Okay, great.
He doesn't want people to go hungry. Unfortunately, he died in his late 30s, July 16th, 1981. Chaplin was en route to a show in East Meadow, New York. But in the early afternoon, he was fatally injured in a fiery traffic collision with a semi outside of Jericho, New York. But he had 9 studio albums, 4 top 40 hits. This is his only number one song from the album Verities and Balderdash, his 4th studio album. Yeah, this is a heartbreaking song. It tells of a father and a son who can't schedule time to be with one another. Serves as a warning against putting one's career before family. Over time, both father and son grow into a switching of life roles. The father realizes his son's ambitions of college and grades and trying to be successful and wants to spend more time with him, but he slowly grasps the reality that now his son has no time for such things for his old man. Can you relate to that, John? Have you put career over family?
No, I wouldn't say that. You know, there are instances where you put career over social life, perhaps. But I just think this isn't the kind of message that is going to usually resonate with, like, a number one popular song. Like, don't people want to be, like, happy and think about happy things? Or if not, you know, like, heartbreak?
So you're saying you've never listened to a song and thought, man, it's encouraged you to change your life a little bit. You need to live your life a little bit better.
Okay, so that's supposed to be the real message here, is, like, supposed to be uplifting, like change your life for the better. I mean, I guess I can understand that a little bit more. I had always been under the impression, without doing much research on this song, that it was just like,
I mean, for some
a sad thing. And I think that's just because, listen, Church of Laszlo that I listened to in Kansas City, they used to always play it to make fun of one of the characters on the show who apparently did not have a very good relationship with their dad. So I always thought, like, it was a super sad song or something. I didn't really know that it was supposed to be like, you know, hey, change your life around, you got this, let's do it.
I mean, there's hundreds of songs out there that encourage people to live their life and what they would say is for the better. For some, it might be Cats in the Cradle. For some, it might be Margaritaville. I don't know, it could be for other reasons. Now, Harry Chapin, he included various symbols of childhood in the lyrics, including Cat's Cradle is a game played with string. Silver spoons are ornaments for babies. Little Boy Blue is a nursery rhyme. Man in the Moon is supposed to be about the human features that children see when they look at the moon. So this is kind of a deep song, is what he's trying to say. Now, Chapin, the song was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2011, but the best part about this song was in season 6 of The Office, title St. Patrick's Day, Dwight sings along with the intent to taunt Jim, who is just returning from work from paternity leave.
Oh, so he's taunting him that he's coming back to work and he's not going to have a relationship with his kid?
Yeah, that's the message he's sending. It has to do a lot with what I just mentioned about the song and Jim's missing this time with his brand new daughter.
That's really funny, actually. That's pretty well done. That's some good comedy writing right there.
And then because Dwight was like, Jim, do you mind if my headphones are working? Do you mind if I listen to it quietly on my speakers? Jim's like, yeah, that's fine. And just rips out the cord and starts ripping Cats in the Cradle. And then Jim cuts it off. And then all of a sudden you hear, a cat's, you know, with Andy in the background. Great scene. Great scene of The Office.
Gonna see if I can find this on YouTube now. Anything with Andy like that, I'm a sucker for anything with Andy. So, yeah, very much here for that. Said season 6?
Season 6. St. Patrick's Day is the episode.
Okay. That's all you got, huh? Ending with The Office reference there?
Of course.
I feel like we've all been brought down a little bit by this.
With The Office or with just the song in general?
With the song in general.
I'll be quite honest with you. That's probably the first time I've ever heard that song from start to finish. And I don't really have the want to hear it again.
Yeah, it doesn't seem overly catchy to me. The message is not something that's like real super duper fun. It just, that's not, I need, a pop song needs to be more for me.
Harry, I know you died tragically and you lived your life trying to make the world a better place, but your music didn't put me in a better spot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, same here. Same here, dude. Glad that you did the work on Hunger, though, or whatever. Seems like you're a better man than I. That's all I got. That's all I got on that song.
I'm kind of hungry right now.
Yeah, I am too. We're going to do Ask Us Anything, but I also have, speaking of music, I have some very good music news for you coming up. All right, so the good news is you remember the podcast series that I was trying to get you to listen to or made you listen to, dissecting like an entire Kanye West album.
Who?
There's a new season, Mitch. And after like six seasons in a row where it was like there was Beyonce, Frank Ocean. I don't remember some of the other ones. Just stuff I wasn't quite as interested in. Certainly not to listen to like 8 hours worth of in-depth analysis on. We're getting Yeezus this season. First episode just came out yesterday. Shout out to Spotify for letting me know. We're getting Yeezus as the next album. Kanye's other, I would say, I shouldn't say other classic, because to me there's really like four or five, but it would be the second most interesting, widely regarded as a classic album that he has.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've checked out, so.
Get ready for that, baby. I'm excited for it.
I ran out of that room about as quickly as Oregon State had to leave their hotel after they lost.
Bam! All right, what type of... This is maybe my favorite question I've ever asked you, Mitch. What type of instrument reflects your personality?
I would have to say definitely a guitar. A guitar is my personality because at times I can come in fierce, I can come in heavy, shred. And at times I know how to simmer down. I don't know, that's about as good as I can get. I'm not good at describing myself.
Yeah, I feel like that was kind of a lame response. All right. Well, I would say, for whatever reason, what comes to mind is a saxophone, which is something that I played once upon a time in middle school and 1 year of high school. I quit as soon as they were going to make me join the marching band. And it's because, like, I feel like I'm a lot for show, you know? Like, I care too much about like what people think of me, what the aesthetic is of me. And the saxophone, I feel like, is very showy in that way. And then, you know, still has some substance to it. It still has a lot of range. You can be pretty cool, or you can be kind of a dork and be fairly lame with what you're doing with the saxophone. That's really the best that I got. That's actually a very hard question to answer. And some of it too, like I never really practiced very much when I was playing, so I don't think I was really all that good. Alto sax, by the way. We're going alto sax.
Well, and with a guitar there, I mean, there's different types of guitars, and with my, you know, my personality is different kind of aspects. I mean, I'm into a lot of things, a lot of different things. Although a lot of people are kind of one-dimensional, I can really branch out.
Yeah, not you. Not you. You are not one-dimensional, my friend. By the way, the thing that I hated about that, and I still, like, it makes me gag to think about, is like the excess spit that comes out of like those mouthpieces, like on any
woodwind
instrument.
But mostly the brass instruments. Yeah, that's why they have the spit valves on.
God. Ugh. It's terrible. Ugh. If you had the day off and could travel anywhere in the blink of an eye, where would you go tomorrow?
Boy. How much time do you got?
We were talking about this the other day because all these lamos in our group text,
oh my God,
including Mason, was just like, somehow the idea of like travel got brought up, and like Bud was wanting to travel, and Mason was just like, if it doesn't have a baseball park, like I don't want to travel at all. Don't want to go overseas.
So
don't want to go
boring.
Anywhere. Oh my God. So
if,
boring.
If you do not like traveling, you are instantly just the most boring person imaginable.
Oh, it was such a Mason opinion. I was like, God, Mason, get some culture in your life, man. Oh,
if I could blink and go anywhere, definitely probably somewhere in Europe. I just really want to go to Europe. I want to check out everything.
Honestly, I've been jonesing for New York lately. I've been jonesing for New York, which is If I could go somewhere for like a week, that's where I would want to go. If I were literally like I had the day off tomorrow and I get one day and I blink my eye and I'm there and then I blink my eye and I'm back. I feel like this is quoting a country song. Isn't there a country song called this? Somewhere on a beach. Just somewhere on a beach. Just like a one-day siesta and get drunk on the beach. That would be what I would choose for 24 hours.
I'm going to give you an exact answer. The Swiss Alps. The Swiss Alps.
Just for a day, you want to go to the Swiss Alps?
Yeah, a day. Okay. Give me the Swiss Alps.
Okay. I tell you what, depending on the weather situation, like I am feeling... I've just been there so much, though. But, you know, the mountains sound great. So, you know, Colorado sounds pretty good. Maybe, like, California. Mountains at, like, a mountainous area in California sounds pretty awesome. Just get me to a beach.